Minute Music Hour. I'm Andy Moore from the United States. Keep your eye on this fella. The one and only Loudon Wainwright III.
Suddenly it's Christmas, right after Halloween. Forget about Thanksgiving, it's just a buffet in between. There's lights and tinsel in the windows, they're stocking up the shelves. Santa's slaving at the North Pole in a sweatshop full of elves. There's got to be a build-up to the day that Christ was born. The halls are decked with pumpkins and ears of Indian corn. Dragging through the falling leaves in a one-horse open sleigh. Suddenly it's Christmas, 7 weeks before the day. Suddenly it's Christmas, the longest holiday. The season is upon us, won't go away. It's a season, it's a marathon. Retail eternity, it's not over till it's over and you throw away the tree. Outside it's positively bombing, in the air an Aryan nip. Suddenly it's Christmas, unbutton and unzip. Yes, they're working overtime, Santa's little runts. Christmas comes but once a year and goes on for 2 months. Christmas carols in December and November too. It's no wonder we're depressed when the whole thing is through. Finally, it's January. Let's sing Auld Lang Syne. But here comes another heartache shaped like a valentine. Suddenly, it's Christmas. The longest holiday. The season is upon us. A pox, it won't go away. It's a season, it's a marathon. Retail eternity, and it's not over till it's over and you throw away the tree. No, it's not over till it's over and you throw away. It's still not over till it's over and you throw away the tree.
And good morning, good morning. Thanks, Lynn, for finding that.
You're welcome. Thank you, Daniel Flesses, for putting that up on Facebook.
And, of course, that was
Loudon Wainwright III.
Loudon. Tomato, yes. Tomato, apricot. Good morning, It's just about 4 minutes after eight. You're listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani, here with my co-host, Lynn.
Good morning.
And this morning we have with us Micah White, the contributing editor for Adbusters, with us to discuss Carnivalesque Rebellion Week and Buy Nothing Day, which is, of course, today. Good morning, Micah. Well, the engineering pixies are going to be working on getting Micah back.
That'll be lovely.
We'll enjoy that moment when it comes.
Yes, so Buy Nothing Day.
In the meantime,
it's one of my favorite days of the year.
You know, so many people have gotten into this idea where life is really a time to accumulate ever flashier, shinier things, rather a race to do so. And these things are way too often made from non-renewable resources. And they're made by people working without basic worker protections, environmental standards, adequate pay, decent conditions. And it's paid for through debt, generally accruing interest to financiers, which then has to be earned by serving one's corporate master on this end of things so that you can keep on purchasing those flashier, shinier things. The service is often unfulfilling. You know, I don't know that many people that say they really love their jobs. I know a few. There's a handful of luckies. I'm one of them. I love what I do. But
I often do.
But not so many people are in our boat. A lot of people feel like they are stuck in this service and they have to stay there because, you know, well, that's how you get along. That's how you pay for the consumer gadgets, the shiny things. And you know, all too often that unfulfilling sort of feeling that you get from working that job, it's really because that's a job unbefitting to an intelligent and creative human being. And that, you know, you probably have other things in your life. You want to explore passions and talents and such. But that might not be as lucrative. And so it gets you out of the consumer race and you're going to fall behind. I mean, the Joneses are going to have things you hadn't even thought of yet. Even as Oregon continues to have double-digit unemployment, those folks that are continuing to work and they still have that hamster wheel syndrome. Those that aren't working are still seduced by the call of the shiny consumer goods. I mean, come on, all the cool kids have one after all. So all too often, people fall into despair, feeling a lack of self-worth when they're not able to keep up with those manufactured desires, and identities become commingled with what job you hold or don't hold at the moment, as the case may be. But I would put out there that a human being's natural habitat is not a cubby nor a shopping mall. Buy Nothing Day is all about focusing on breaking free from the cycle of consumer addiction. The Carnival-esque Week of Rebellion is an international happening to call for the reclamation of our lives in a new way, and a new way of organizing economies, communities, interacting and dealing with each other. It begs the question of what happens when we start to become ourselves, not merely consumers or products. What happens when we fully engage with one another, when we become fully human? What have you done to free your mind lately? That's the question I have. With that, I think the Engineering Pixies have gotten Micah back on the line. Good morning, Micah.
Good morning, Micah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. Let's start off with the work of Adbusters. Micah White is contributing editor for Adbusters and campaign manager for this event, for Buy Nothing Day. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Excellent. Well, let's start off with the work of Adbusters. Can you explain the organization to our listeners?
Definitely. We are an international magazine that's been around for 20 years now. We're distributed in North America and UK and Australia. So basically, we argue that just like our rivers and our oceans can be polluted by, you know, toxic waste or the BP spill, so too can our minds be polluted, and the pollution is by advertising. This incessant stream of commercial messages that almost every American experiences every day, you know, thousands and thousands of messages telling them to be dissatisfied with their lives, to telling them that they need to buy this thing that they can't afford, and that advertising flood is a kind of mental pollutant that has real social and cultural consequences. And we kind of situate most of the problems that we see in the world, you know, from climate change to terrorism to the widespread increases in mental illness, back to this kind of advertising flood that just, you know, hits us all from morning until night.
On every level, on subconscious level in particular, I think, in some ways. So with Buy Nothing Day, what are some of the things that you all are doing?
You know, Buy Nothing Day has been... We've been organizing it for about 18 years, so it's celebrated all over the world. This year it's being celebrated in at least 45 countries, and there's just so much stuff that can be done. I mean, it starts from the simple level of, you know, I'm just literally not going to buy anything. And, like, that's a really great thing to start with, and if anyone's out there listening and they haven't bought anything yet today, they should try that one, because it's really, really hard to buy nothing. You think it's going to be really easy, right? You're like, what? That's so easy to buy nothing. But our whole lives, our whole economy, our whole culture is you know, around consuming something in the day, from its coffee, newspaper, something like that. So that's a really good one just to start with, is like, see how hard it is to actually spend $0 today. You will
I know.
Be
I'm saying,
that.
I'm going, well, but food would be okay, wouldn't it? I could buy some food, but because I'm really trying to buy nothing. And of course,
but she's in a little bit of a panic.
And my favorite knitting stores, and people are being bombarded today. My favorite knitting stores are having huge sales,
yeah.
But you just have to stick to your guns about certain things, huh?
Yeah, it's hard. And then you know what? I mean, it's not what's fun. What I think is good about just doing the buy nothing in terms of that is that you learn that not only is it really hard, but it's like it's kind of exciting to try it and fail. It's exciting to try something that's really hard, I think, and every year to try it again. Like this last year, you know, what happened was I was visiting my family for Thanksgiving, and they bought bagels in the morning. And before I had even gotten up, they had already bought these things, and then I ate them, and I was part of, you know, so I had already lost before like 8 in the morning. So I think it's a really interesting. So, but other than that, there's people who are, you know, they're meeting up with friends and making homemade gifts. In San Francisco, there's going to be some street protesting. In Vancouver, people are going out to the economics department of the university and putting up some posters. In New Zealand, people are going to do something called a zombie walk, which is they just dress up like consumer zombies and walk through the mall, you know.
You can never have too many
out.
Zombies.
Yeah, exactly. just try to wake people up from the kind of mindlessness of this consumer rat race that we are stuck on right now.
In Portland, I believe we're going to have at 11 o'clock on Southwest Yamhill and Broadway, it's a don't buy fur sort of rally. They want to have 200 folks to really pull it off. They're going to have vegan cake to share, which I'm hoping they didn't buy today. And someone making it, though, that's a different story. That's going to be at 11 o'clock today at Southwest Yamhill and Broadway.
Cool. Yeah. There's stuff everywhere, and I think that we're really trying to get people to not only, like, if you don't have a group that, you know, a lot of cities have something already being planned, but if you don't have something being planned, you can buy nothing, you can call up your friends, you can really make it, you can choose to, you know, engage in this kind of festival of non-consumption.
And this is one of the things I've really loved about it over the years, because it is truly a DIY holiday.
Yeah.
And it's a holiday for our new culture that we share. This is a day to have some fun with, I, you know, personally think and have in the past. One of those things, I want to tell a little story about a Buy Nothing Day that I truly enjoyed. A couple few, let's call it several years ago. God, I'm getting old. Lynn. Anyways.
There's only one. You either get old or you
well,
die.
Okay.
That's how it
goes. So several years ago, let's just say, I started out with a friend attending an announced sort of picket march sort of thing outside of a store, for the purposes of informing others that it's Buy Nothing Day and perhaps people wanted to buy nothing. And so we stood about with signs, some of which were very clever, I thought. But it felt ultimately a little dissatisfying. It felt a little like this looked a whole lot like every other picket I've ever been to. And it didn't really feel all that joyous. We were kind of wet, and it was kind of, you know, drizzly. You know, it's Portland. It's late November, and we weren't really looking like we were having a good time. So as far as presenting a joyful alternative, I don't feel like we were really hitting that mark. And my friend kind of looks at me, and he says, well, let's go inside. Let's see what we can do inside the store. And this seemed more appealing and drier. And so we left our picket signs. We went inside, and it was a Gap store. And as it turned out, suddenly inspiration hit us, and we decided that we were shoppers for the day, and we were going to do the right thing and look for clothing made in America. And we started...
You had your job cut out for you.
Well, we just sort of started going through, you know, vest by vest, T-shirt by T-shirt, jeans by jeans, looking at labels and sort of having this conversation that got a little louder and a little more frantic with each other about the search that we were having now. And, of course, a salesperson comes over and starts to try to, you know, help us. You know, can I help you find something? Well, yes, we're looking for something made in America. Can you help us find that? And it engaged eventually every shop person, you know, every employee of the store, and several of the other customers who suddenly were looking at the labels and asking where the Marshall Islands are. And why is all this stuff made in Honduras? And it was really fun. And we all engaged with each other, perfect strangers, shopkeepers, and, you know, other customers alike. It was wonderful. There was actually a shopkeeper, store attendant, whatever we call our fine store helpers, who at some point says, you know, I really hate this place. I'm only getting through college. I'm out of here. So, yeah, it's just like, you know, everyone gets their job somewhere, right? Everyone works. And that's a whole nother part of this conversation. But that, you know, turning something from a planned sort of quiet picket to something that was truly engaging and what I found to be creative and informative really worked. And it worked for a number of people. That's the kind of actions that you can do spontaneously with a friend anytime.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's why this year, you know, we're expanding Buy Nothing Day, and we're kind of calling it a carnivalesque rebellion. We're trying to, I think, show people that the real way out of the society that we're so dissatisfied with isn't kind of the dour militancy of the left, where we organize these massive protests in the rain, and then the police are there, and they like get mad at us, and then we go home, and nothing happens. Like, I think that what we need to start doing is like you're saying, these examples of trying to truly live and engage with our environments, and really feel the world differently, and really wake up, I think, from the consumer days. That's why I think your story is a really good example of a perfect buy nothing day action. You guys went in there and other shoppers all of a sudden were like, wow, you know, what am I doing here buying this stuff that's not even made in America? And do I even really want it anyways? And, you know, maybe I should just go home and hang out with my friends, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And so I want to encourage our callers to share with us this morning ideas you might have, things you might want to do today. You know, have some fun with people, have some fun with your friends. And what can you do to wake ourselves and each other up from this malaise? 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join with us this morning. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn, my beloved co-host. And we have with us by phone Micah White, contributing editor of Adbusters.
And we are on KBOO in Portland. Micah, I was wondering, I was reading a little thing on the website about economics and happiness. And I like, that's an interesting thing and something our listeners might be interested in. How do you address that, those two things?
Yeah, I mean, what's weird about, you know, our society is that we're told you need that everyone should make as much money as possible because then you can buy things and basically you'll be happy, you'll, you know, travel to the Cayman Islands or whatever. But there's been numerous studies that show that after a certain point of income, you don't get any happier. You just it's just flat out, you do not get any happier. And in fact, if you look at it, since the World War II, depression rates have skyrocketed around the world. And you can see a real correlation between depression and economic development. So there's this strange thing that happens where actually the richer you get, the more money you make, the more sad you become, the more depressed you become. And that's this, and that's one of the secrets of consumerism. Because once you get, once you're sad and depressed, well, what do? You go shopping, right? So you get
retail therapy, I believe people call it.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I thought that was
I've done it. I tried.
That was like an ironic joke, but I saw that in the mall. Someone actually had a sign that said, you know, shopping therapy or whatever. So
yes, it's, you know, it's not just a joke. Sadly enough, you know, I look at it as the hamster wheel syndrome, wherein, you know, the more you are feeling isolated and alienated, often because you have a job that is not befitting of an intelligent, creative human being, the more shiny goods and services you are attempting to get to fill that vacancy, to fill that void. And the beat goes on, as they say.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really true. And I think that the trick is to realize that you don't get any happier with more money, and you definitely don't get happier with any more things that you can buy. I mean, we've become a very almost, I would say, disgustingly materialistic society to the point where we actually think you can buy happiness. I mean, that's something that would go against the wisdom of every previous civilization has understood. You can't actually buy happiness. You know, you have to earn happiness by living a fruitful and, you know, exciting and spiritual or whatever life. And I think that's hopefully one of the lessons of today, as all these people out avoiding shopping today.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Ani, did you get this little thing from Teresa about the people who have been trampled to death by 2,000 people plus crowd as shoppers in Queens? Someone was trampled to death because 2,000 shoppers apparently felt they wanted to get into that mall really fast.
And that is the madness.
In 2007.
That is the madness of this day, the hyped up consumerism that this day exemplifies for so many people. Madness. Let's go ahead and talk to one of our listeners.
Excellent.
I believe Conch is on the line. Good morning, Conch.
Hello. I had a question for Micah because I'm an American citizen. I've been told I have these airwaves that I own, these broadcast airwaves that the television networks go out over. And I seem to remember a few years ago, and you can tell me whether or not Adbusters had something to do with this. I seem to remember that they did. There were these wonderful 30-second commercial spots that featured the Autosaurus, and it was a sort of a buy-nothing-day-themed commercial. And none of the television networks would run these. And I'm wondering if you can give some background on this and tell us what was the reasoning. Was there ever an excuse why these very clever commercials never ended up running on broadcast TV?
That's a great question, actually. That's a really great question. So the funny thing, Adbusters actually, the founding event of Adbusters was in 1989, the forestry industry in British Columbia was running these advertisements called Forests Forever. And they were saying, don't worry, we're cutting down old growth forests, but it's okay because what we're doing is forward stewardship, and it's going to be fine, you know, blah, blah, blah. Basically,
right.
An early example of greenwashing. And so at that time, the founder of Adbusters, he was a documentary filmmaker. He went down to the, he made a 30-second television ad saying basically the opposite. Look, this isn't, they're not protecting our forests, they're turning our forests into tree farms, and it's horrible. And the TV station would not sell him airtime.
Right.
And that's when he realized that we have, that American citizens and Canadian citizens and citizens of the West have no access to the airwaves, even though it's our public property. And the discourse is completely controlled. One side gets to say as much as they want, which is consume, consume, consume. And if you try to put an ad on television saying don't consume, you can't. So we've been putting, we've been trying to buy airtime for 20 years, and actually we're engaged in a now decades-long lawsuit against these television stations who believe that they have the right to basically only allow one side of the discourse to happen. And what's crazy is if you go to our website, you can actually hear the rejection, the rejections. I mean, we have this one ad that all it says is, did you know that a Big Mac is 50% fat? Okay, that's from the McDonald's website, the nutritional information. That's not a controversial piece of information. You know?
Right.
So we tried to air that on MTV. MTV said, you can't air this on our show, on our station, because it would, you know, offend McDonald's. It's like, what are you talking? Like, what is that? You know, this is a supposedly democratic country where if we actually come to you with money and with a television quality ad, I can't put it online because it contradicts the message that you're promoting.
Well, and truth seems to be very offensive.
Right.
These days.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's a really great question. I mean, Adbusters, one of our core ideas is that there needs to be the ability of everyday people to go down to the television stations and open up the public discourse. You know, if you don't want to see ads that say you should consume, then we should be able to also put ads that say people should not consume. And I think that that's really an area that the fight's going to keep going on.
Right. That's, I mean, again, as you say, you have money in hand. This is a capitalist system in which we live. You want to purchase airtime. Freedom of speech plays into this, one would imagine, but of course it doesn't need to because it's advertising. It's a private business transaction, right?
And advertising is nothing about the truth.
Absolutely. Right. We have Rabia with us on the phone. Good morning, Rabia.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good. You know, this is such a great topic. The hysteria over this, like, Black Friday, this shopping thing, it's completely taken over, like, network news. Like, that, like, somehow that's news where to buy, you know, where you can get, you know, a discount on a television is news as opposed to other things that are really happening.
Hey, Target opened at 4 a.m.
It's crazy. And so there's a couple of things. One, I've been, it's taken me now probably about 5 years to really extricate myself from kind of like the shopping habit. I thought that it would take maybe 9 months to a year to really kind of get out of that mindset. But it's just like on Don't Buy Nothing Day. It's really hard to go through the whole day without consuming one thing where you exchange money for it. And so, like, kind of getting into that set. So my tip for the day, if you're trying to work through that, just when you feel compelled, when you feel that, you know, like, compelling urge to buy something, that you feel you want something because you're being bombarded with that message constantly that of you're either inadequate or you need something or you'll be, like, hot if you buy, you know, if you use this product or you won't be a loser. One thing that's really simple is you can just say, do I already have one of these? And depending on you, like with yarn, you'd be like, well, of course I have one of these, but not exactly like these, or shoes, where you could be like, well, of course I have shoes, but these shoes would be perfect with X outfit, or, you know. So it's really, really hard to do that, but it is something that you can, like, start slowing it down by just asking yourself, do I already have one of these? Like, do I already have a pot this size, or do I already have, you know, something that matches? So that's another thing. But a question I have for the caller is, you know, I've been thinking about this Black Friday. It just seems like people are being, you know, encouraged to go out and spend, and they're probably going into deeper debt with credit cards to do it. probably most people aren't paying for their purchases with cash. I'm just guessing. So I'm just wondering if Black Friday isn't actually just like this really quick injection of, you know, like a quick heroin fix monetarily that actually is worse for the economy in the long run because more people are going into debt. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to respond on two levels. I think the first part is that, I mean, one of the things that's really important is since this Supreme Court decision now that corporations can give unlimited donations to our so-called representatives, you know, I think there's this feedback loop now between the corporate-owned media and now the corporate-owned politicians. So, of course, the corporate-owned media, it has a vested interest in telling everyone you should go out and do shopping because they actually make money off of telling you that message. And then they funnel that message into politicians who then, you know, also structure the society around encouraging consumption. So I think the first thing is to just acknowledge now that we live in this basically a corporate-owned democracy, quote-unquote democracy, which is just completely beholden to corporate interests because they're the ones who now can give all the money. And I think the second thing is you're exactly right. I mean, we humans owe an extremely large ecological debt, right? For thousands of years, we've been extracting resources from the earth, and we've been turning them into things, and then we've been throwing those things into landfills. Especially in the last, you know, 50 to 100 years, the pace of industrialization and consumer and this consumer drive has been really destroying the earth. So beyond just a personal debt, a financial debt, we have an ecological debt, and we need to. One day that debt is going to come due, and that is why it is very important for us to start thinking about how to get out of the consumer rat race, not just for our own selves, but for everyone who lives on this planet. I mean, climate change is caused by people who are right now binge shopping at Walmart. And I know that they don't want to hear that message because what are you talking about? I'm just buying a gift for my family. But you are directly responsible in your little way, and so am I because I also have to buy things, but we are all directly responsible for floods in Pakistan, you know, droughts in China. You know, these things are caused by overconsumption, and I think that that's really an important message to get out there and for people to start thinking about nowadays.
I think that is, in fact, a very important message. 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us on the air this morning. I'm Ani, here with Lynn. You're listening to KBOOG, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and we have with us on the phone Micah White from Adbusters. We're discussing Buy Nothing Day and Carnivalesque Rebellion. I believe joining us on the phone is Crystal. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Liz, thank you, Micah and Ani and Lynn. I had a story to share you. I was first listening to your experience protesting outside. It sounded like it came out to be a good day. I had an experience last year where I wasn't really protesting per se. It was the day before. I still had my Leonard Peltier sign from a protest, and I got dropped off in Lincoln City to see my family. My brother was in town too, and we agreed to meet at the huge, I don't know if you know, in Lincoln City they have this really big outlet mall.
Yeah.
And I was terrorized by the guard there. They have a private, you know, security. And it was basically about my sign. It said on the back, you know, today's genocide cover-up day, tomorrow's Buy Nothing Day. And they were insisting, oh, you got to get, you know. And I said, well, can I just leave it here in the office or can I sit at the bench? I mean, I sat at the bench. He followed me. I went out to the sidewalk, and he started following me. And I finally found my brother. I told him to tell our friend to meet me at a certain place. But I literally had to hide in a bush because the guy was threatening to call the police on me. And I was like...
Because you had a sign.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wasn't holding it up or anything. I was just looking for my brother so I could meet up with them so I'd get a ride home.
She wasn't in the free speech area.
Right. It's a public sidewalk. They own like this huge, you know, huge area of blocks. But I lived there before they even built the...
The outlet.
Mall.
Yes.
It was kind of a bad experience, and I'm like, I don't think these sidewalks are the property of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that my experience wasn't so good, but I'm thinking of going back and doing it again a little more cleverly.
Well, good on you. Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thanks.
You know, one thing that I have been doing in general for consumption is I started doing this with a friend a few years ago. It was called It's a 24-hour or 36-hour purchase. Like, really, just step away, back off if you think you need to buy something. It's sort of like sometimes with sugary desserts, if you just wait 15 minutes, you don't have to anymore. Because it's an addiction like any other thing that we have.
Maybe you can have a buddy system. I feel the need to purchase.
That's true. Accountability is not a bad idea
for
that.
Wait, I'll come over. I've got...
But for me, it's like wait 24 hours.
Right.
Okay, am I still having a burning need for whatever? Wait 36, or if it's, you know, sometimes a 36-hour one. And that often just dissipates that need to jones out and shoot up on shoes, whatever.
Shooting up on shoes. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
For that image. If we could look at the Carnivalesque Rebellion for a moment. You had mentioned that the idea sort of, you know, was out there to do By Nothing Day up bigger, to make it longer, to encourage people to find that sort of joyous spectacle making way of breaking through the numbing that happens so readily in our society. Can you talk a little bit more about Carnivalesque Rebellion and what sort of things are you aware of that have happened over this last several days?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that the insight for the Carnivalesque Rebellion and why we really decided to do it is because, you know, like I was saying, we've seen these massive protests. I mean, I remember the ultimate one was, you know, like in 2003, February 15, 2003, where the anti-war, all the anti-war groups, I helped organize one too. You know, we just put all our effort into these massive global protests, right?
Yep.
And it was amazing.
Yep.
It was amazing. And I loved it. And I'm always going to remember it. But what did George Bush say? He said, "I don't listen to focus groups."
Yep.
And then it all kind of just disappeared.
Liar.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his whole politics was based on focus groups. But
yeah,
anyway,
sure.
So like, So basically, I think that model, though, from the 60s has continued, this idea that we need to all throw our efforts into these big protests, and it's so much work, and it's going to cost a lot of money, we got to get permits, the police have to be notified, blah, blah, blah. And I think that that's just not how revolution is going to happen in this country, you know, because I think that now revolution is going to happen with a few dedicated people, like the listeners to this show, who just start saying, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not going to just work my life away so that I can buy stuff. And the system is so fragile. I mean, I think the important part of the story that we just heard about this woman, you know, with a sign, and they couldn't even have her show the sign because it would be so horrible, is that the system is so fragile that if we actually got together with our friends and started to say, you know what, I'm not going to buy anything, not just today, but this whole week, all the money I'm going to make, I'm just going to put into cash or whatever and put in my mattress or whatever. You know, I'm just not going to spend it. I'm not going to contribute to the economy. I think that the system is so fragile that it would kind of just collapse. And I think that it would collapse in a similar way to the Soviet Union, how it just, everyone thought that it was going to last forever, and then one day, you know, it just kind of just collapsed, you know? So I think that America is in that similar kind of point where, yes, they think that they're invulnerable and they have the body scanners in the airport, but if we just kind of all stop shopping, if we all kind of just, like, look the other way and start doing what we call a Carnivalesque Rebellion, which is just pulling pranks, making it more difficult for consumers to continue, you know? Maybe sometimes they go to open the store and the locks have been glued. And they don't know who it was, but they know that it was someone who's trying to tell them, look, we have to stop consuming so much, you know? Or they walk down the street and there's a sign up that just says, you know what, we should do Buy Nothing Day today. And I think that this is kind of what we're trying to go for. It's just a revolution of everyday life, this kind of situationist idea.
And if you want publicity, no marches are being given any sort of publicity
right.
anymore.
Exactly.
It's the way the media runs. I mean, you have to sort of run with it, is wanting small, shocking things. Like we had the Yes Men on last week, who just go in and do things fast and then get out.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that, you know, I think that one of the things what is important about the Carnivalesque Rebellion is that it's also, I mean, I think there's this idea on the left, and that's probably from our Christian, you know, heritage, that there's going to be some sort of revolutionary messiah who will come. And he or she will do the revolution for me so that I don't have to do it myself. And that will be either at some large protest or I'll vote for someone. And basically, I can just sit on my couch and I can wait for this other person to do it for me. And I think that that's just not going to happen.
It's hierarchy gone totally amok, run amok, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think that the point is now that we each have to just say to ourselves, you know, I want to live a different way. I have to live a different way. And that's how the revolution is going to happen. So I think that's what we're really trying to get people. So Buy Nothing Day and the Carnivalesque Rebellion, that's just the beginning. And I think that we want to just kind of encourage this idea that every day, you know, you're out walking the street, maybe you just carry some signs with you and you just put up a sign that says, let's stop shopping, you know? And that mm-hmm. and that small act of defiance, I think, can really start a cultural shift in this country to a much more sustainable and much more enjoyable and much more happy existence.
I believe it is true. Your website, adbusters.org, is a place where people can sort of find ideas from each other and you know, bits of inspiration, I think. Can you talk a little bit about some, you mentioned the zombie walk that's being planned somewhere in Australia. Can you talk about a couple of other things people might be interested in doing? I know there's been an idea circulating for a bit about bookstores. If you happen to have a bookstore handy, there's, of course, Bush's new release of his memoirs. And I know that some people have decided that it's really not so accurate to put it in the memoirs, that perhaps it should be better put in the true crime section. And so there are some folks that have, you know, helpfully reshelved. And, you know, little things like that are out there inspiring elves and pixies everywhere to do their work.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a really good example. I think that it's just, I think you're right. I mean, I think it's these kind of these subtle things. I think that, you know, moving the book is a really great example. But I also think that just kind of, I mean, it's kind of coming to grips with where we are at politically in this historical moment. I think that it's a little bit, I think what we're trying to do at Adbusters is just kind of tell people, like, okay, you know, the ecological movement has been around now for, I don't know, what, 60s, I mean, not 60, but since like the 60s, right? So about 40 years, people have been talking about, you know, the need to kind of shift away from a consumer economy. And I think that now things are getting a little bit more, okay, now it's time to actually do that. So I think it's a question of, people not necessarily having like a script of what needs to be done, but just looking around their surroundings and getting re-engaged with their surroundings. I think your example of the bookstore is really great. I think another example is something as simple as where you spend your money is what stores are going to continue to exist. So it's quite simple. If I don't want Starbucks and Safeway and Walmart to dominate my local economy, then I just simply must not go there. It's as simple as that. And that means that you can't get something that you like or whatever, it's fine. I mean, you have to just deal with it. So what I do here is, you know, there's one tiny little grocer, like one block away from a Safeway and then one block away from another big supermarket. And I just persistently go to that tiny little grocer because, you know, I just want them to continue to exist because they are a holdout of independent culture. And the same thing with coffee shops, magazine stores. But I think that you can't just do it based around selling. I think you also have to do it based around, you know, putting up signs. If you're a student, you got to start questioning your professors to really make them talk about what's going on in the world. I think it's getting a little bit more rebellious kind of attitude.
And speaking those questions loudly, thinking of those questions, thinking around the corners, because
yeah.
I think a lot of that numbing, a lot of the flow of information in the status quo is really to even keep us from thinking of those questions.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really hard to distance oneself. And there's a great kind of idea from this German philosopher, Martin Heidegger, and he talks about how the things that are nearest to us are actually the most difficult to see. So we, you know, we go around thinking, what's that, the things in the far distance, that's what I can't understand. No, it's actually, what we can't understand is it's very hard for us to see the ideology we live within. It's very hard for us to understand that we live within a society that is, and literally, this propaganda. It's propaganda to continue shopping. It's propaganda to live a certain way. It's propaganda to do all these things. And to distance oneself from that is very difficult. But once you start doing it and you start being like, this society makes no sense. Why am I working my whole life to buy stuff? It just doesn't make any sense. Why do I have to buy food? Why do I have to pay rent? It doesn't make any sense. And it can be a different way, you know. And once you start distancing yourself, you can start thinking about those other ways.
And Micah, we've talked about this before on the show, but my first way to distance yourself is to get rid of your television.
Yes, definitely.
It's crack.
Consumer crack.
It's consumer crack.
Also, for people who might want a little more, you know, Lynn and I, this is the third show we've done this month on the idea of celebrating the spirit of rebellion, starting with Guy Fawkes Day. And we We have looked at ways of reclaiming one's life, ways of inciting that more curious and rebellious nature within to actually go out and, well, do something. You know, again, reclaiming your life, having fun, being joyous, and working to raise awareness of, you know, alternate ways of being, of structuring a society, of making an economy, perhaps shifting to a living economy. How can we look at issues of trade and bring it down to a day-to-day sort of existence? You know, how do we walk it? And a lot of, for me, a lot of my ideas sort of spring from reading that I did years ago on the Society of the Spectacle, on Guy Debord. And I always recommend, if you are interested in this sort of thing, if you are intrigued by the concepts of using grand spectacle to break through the spectacle that has become daily life in mass media, then I would encourage people to check out Debord's work. I heard you mention him in passing there a minute ago, Mike, and I was thrilled.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you're right. I think that that Adbusters were very inspired by the work of Debord and also Raoul Vonnegut, and I think that it's true. They offer kind of another way of thinking about the possibility for rebellion, and I think that it's time to kind of, I mean, one of the problems of the political left, too, is that we've, not only that we organize these large protests, but we have these mammoth organizations, right, that just dominate this whole political spectrum. Like, we have these Move On, these multi-million dollar organizations that become these basically dead weights. They're just literally dead weight. And I think that we give them a lot of, we say, instead of me having to do anything, well, I'll just be a member of this organization. I'll click a few links once in a while, and maybe I'll give them $10 every year.
I'll sign an online petition.
Right, sign an online petition. Be a clicktivist. And I think that the other option really is this kind of what Raoul Vonnegut called a revolution of everyday life, where you have to start living your life, waking up, thinking about the ways that you can be, a meme warrior, we call, like an idea warrior, like living like a cat on the prowl, we also say, you know, like how can we kind of get the magic back in our life and this kind of approach. It's a completely different model, and I think that that's really the model that needs to be explored nowadays politically.
Absolutely. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you have something to share, please do it now. We have but 15 minutes left with Micah White, a contributing editor for Adbusters. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. This
Hi.
Is Positively Revolting. We are coming to you on KBOO, your very own community radio station. And Christine is joining us now. Good morning, Christine.
Hey, Christine.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, comrade.
Hey, I have got the day off because of the strength of the labor movement, which still exists in some places. But I think what I wanted to ask some of Micah too is what other things. I'm thinking of Black Friday as one of those fake national holidays. Not that By Nothing Day is, but it's one of those ones where people go out and join in. They don't really care all that much about buying stuff, or if they do, it's because they're thinking of things as love. But it's something they can do with a whole bunch of other people because they don't feel connected. And I'm thinking maybe Buy Nothing Day would be more successful if there were things like what happens at Martin Luther King Day, where people go out and have a day of service. If this could be a day of connection, like real connection with people and real love. And I don't have any ideas. I just thought of this right when I was listening. And I appreciate you guys and your work. And thanks a lot. I'll take any answer offline.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, if you look at our society, I mean, we're each individually kind of starved for connection, right? Because we sit on the Facebook and we, you know, check our status updates and we've really replaced kind of warm, human, face-to-face communication with this sterile kind of text messaging and phone, cell phone, and this kind of stuff. And I think that people do, they look to, like you're saying, these consumer spectacles as kind of a way to regain that connectedness. And I think that's an interesting interpretation. Yeah, maybe people are out on the shopping mall not because they actually want to shop and get into debt, but because they're just looking to be around people and feel connected and vibrant with the crowd. And I think that's probably true. And I think that, you know, we encourage everyone to organize Buy Nothing Day events. You don't have to wait till next year's Buy Nothing Day. If you want to counter this fake connectedness with real connectedness, then, you know, you can organize something in your local community and start being that kind of local organizer, appoint yourself local organizer of your neighborhood to, you know, change the way things are done.
Excellent.
We have Denise with us on the phone. Good morning, Denise.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to comment a little bit more about television, and I personally stopped watching it like around 1980, and because it is so addictive, and I always marvel when I stay in a hotel room, I turn it on for a little while, and I'm like, I can't believe this.
I know, me too.
It's just shocking, but the other thing I wanted to just quickly touch on is social internet sites, and not everyone may agree with me on this, but I quit Facebook last April, and because I realized one night it was, you know, 12:30 in the morning, and I'm on the internet on Facebook, and I'm going, why am I?
Ani's turning
this?
Red over here.
I'm not turning red. I'm just shrugging, as if there is a problem with it. No, get right ahead.
It's so addictive, you know. And what was really shocking though was they wouldn't let me quit. I don't know if anybody's ever tried it, but I was really surprised. What happened was they started asking you all these questions, like, "Well, Denise, why do you want to leave Facebook?" And then they have a list.
That's
like a bad relationship.
Oh, it's terrible.
That makes so much sense. Oh dear.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's like, so I'm like, and then another screen comes up and they go, "You need to check one of these," and they have like 10 reasons why you're leaving Facebook, and I just said, I checked, spend too much time on Facebook, and then they come up with all these reasons to overcome your objection.
Oh.
Like corporate, you know, really corporate sales.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, you know, well, you know, you can manage your time better by doing this, or you can, you know, to overcome this, you can do that. And I'm like, no, I still want to leave Facebook. And then the next screen, they start showing pictures of your friends on Facebook.
You know, won't you miss your friends?
Miss your friends?
It's unbelievable. And they go, you know, Melanie's going to miss you.
Oh.
You know, and Joe's going to miss
Hilarious.
You.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's. I'm not making any.
Yeah,
I completely believe it. Trust me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being on Facebook, yes.
Yeah. So that's what happened. So I became so not, you know, angry, but upset over this, that I had some bumper stickers made up that I pass out to friends, and I have one on my car that says "Kill Facebook," in reference to the old "Kill Your Television" bumper sticker. And I get a lot of people pulling up behind me, and I always wonder, what are they doing? So, you know, and I notice they got their phone out and they're taking a picture of my bumper sticker as I'm driving around Portland.
That's an interesting thing. I mean, right now, I have to say that. It's a very interesting phenomenon, social networking in general on the internet. It provides many opportunities, and I think it also is part of the pablum that sort of is a pseudo connection point, right? Are you my friend or are you my Facebook friend? There is something that is to be looked at there, both in terms of the positive and the negative. I know that I myself found that, oh my God, where did my day just go? I got home from work and I've been on Facebook and now I'm going to bed. And that was, you know, probably the beginning of the spring. And then I did the unthinkable. Well, my laptop died and I had no regular connection point. And I found, yeah, life was okay. So now I've realized I've updated my status about, every other week when I come on the air and
do this
radio.
That's true. You have done that much less.
You know, I that's about all I'm doing at this point, is using it as a way to connect with listeners and by and large, and talk about what we do here on the air. And then I actually have time to connect with friends in this reality. And it's kind of nice seeing people face to face and not just their picture icons. But, you know, I hadn't actually thought about disconnecting from Facebook and going through the battery of questions that you've just explained to us.
That's a great story, Denise.
I do want to say that Jenka Soderberg, who is our PM news director, is actually away from the station for about 10 months as she is on a fellowship, a Knight's scholarship at Stanford, where she is researching news gathering implications for citizen journalism using social networking sites.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
So there's, I mean, again, there's, and Facebook is not the only social networking site. So there's interesting things that one may be able to do with these that we have not fully explored yet. But
you know,
certainly,
that's the whole reason why I signed up. And I thought, well, you know, I'm going to be more connected. And then I just got so addicted to it. I was like trying to find people that I hadn't talked to in 20 years. And I started asking myself, why? Why do I want to talk to someone who I didn't like 20 years ago? Why would it be any different now, you know?
Well, I think some of that is actually just thirst for connection and tribe.
Yeah, I guess, you know. But I did go through withdrawal for like about a month after I quit. It was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? I don't have Facebook in my life anymore. Right. It's terrible.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Denise.
Yeah, okay.
Take care.
Your cautionary tale.
It's a good cautionary tale.
So, Micah, when I Googled you, it said Micah is not on White is not on Facebook and does not tweet.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, actually, one of my first articles I wrote for Adbusters was called "Commit Facebook Suicide."
Excellent.
About this question of you know, Facebook, and more, even beyond. I think it's true that Facebook promotes this kind of false relationships. I mean, but it's also this huge commercial enterprise now. When they, in this article, you could, if you Google it, "Commit Facebook Suicide," talk about how Facebook is trying to corner the market in demand generation. So instead of helping you find things, it's actually what it wants to do is say, hey, your friend has bought, you know, XYZ.
Yeah.
You should buy XYZ. That's basically Facebook's business model, is to encourage using your friends as promotion of commercial items to each other. So that's basically, why we at Adbusters encourage everyone to log off Facebook and disengage from this kind of commercialized friendship model.
And we've often talked about how in coffee shops, people used to occasionally speak to each other.
Right.
And now it's, you know, the drones are on the laptops, and, you know, Ani and I are both sitting here with laptops, but...
But that's so that we can communicate with our engineering pixies without actually going on the air and doing
so. And be informed while we're on the air. But, yeah, it's a strange, wild world. So I was going to ask you, but you already answered that, I think, what you want to do besides how people can connect.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tricky question, because I think when you, for example, sign off on Facebook and refuse to log on there, I mean, there's consequences. You don't get to hear from people that you knew. Like, I don't use Facebook, and a lot of times I don't know what's going on with friends that I used to know, and I think that that's really hard. But I think that there's, you know, there's different kinds of friends, and there's our concept of friendship has really changed over the years. If you do like kind of a historical analysis of what it meant to be a friend in the 18th century versus now, and it's kind of, it's all very different. So I think to get back the real connection, I mean, there's no real easy answers, because you're right. When I go to, you know, campus to use the library, and all the kids there have iPods in, they're on the phones, they're looking at a screen. You can't talk to anyone. It's like you if you strike up a random conversation nowadays with someone, they think you're insane. But, you know, but if you Facebook them, it's okay. It's fine. So I think you're right. It's a struggle to figure out how to get real connection again. But I think one way can be the kind of carnivalesque rebellion, where you go out and try to organize things. And, you know, maybe you meet someone else at the Gap store when you're picketing, and you guys go into the store, and then you're friends for life or something. You know, so I think that's kind of what we're hoping.
Well, I have to say, things like that have worked for me. I mean, that's how I have my family clan. You know, it's the people that I do things with. It's the people that I was going to say I live with, but I don't live with all of them. I mean, the people who are...
She tries, but not quite all of them.
It's part of that living, walking my talk and living my revolution.
Absolutely.
Go collective housing. Go. And John is on the phone with us next. Good morning, John.
Hi. Hey, I have a question for Micah. I've been following Adbusters for years, and like 10 years ago, I took my kids down, and we protested in downtown Portland Buy Nothing Day, and my kids were like 8 and 10 years old, and I'm well on board with this, and have been for years, and I see it's obvious the relevance, you know, for people, the anti-consumerism kind of message for people who have discretionary income. But I wanted to ask Micah to explain to us perhaps the relevance of Buy Nothing Day for the increasingly growing segment of the population that's unemployed, people that don't have discretionary income. How does anti-consumerism relate to them? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that sometimes when I give a talk about, you know, anti-consumerism, people say exactly that. They say, well, that's not fair, because what about me who doesn't have the choice not to consume? I'm forced not to consume, and that's the horrible thing about it. But I think that, I mean, not to evoke necessarily Christian ideas, but, you know, there was an idea a long time ago that easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to go to heaven. And I think that we can transition the society towards really applauding and celebrating people who are poor. I mean, I don't make very much money. I'm a full-time writer. I probably would be considered poor. I think I live a great life, and I'm happy with my life. And I'm not afraid to tell people that I don't make that much money, and I can't afford, you know, I don't own a car, I don't own a television, blah, blah, blah. So I think that I know it's very difficult, and I think that it's kind of frustrating sometimes to have that answer. But I think the answer, yes, is that sometimes the most virtuous people in our society might be those people who are poor. And even if it's against their will because they can't find a job, maybe they are still living a virtuous life. And what they need to do instead of looking for a full-time job is maybe they can survive on a part-time job or something like that. I mean, no one should be starving, but I think it's definitely true that the people who can learn to survive at lower levels of income are the vanguard of really the kind of direction that society should go, which is a massive global downshifting and degrowing of our economy, where a lot of people, the majority of people, have to decrease their standard of living so that the earth can survive. I think that we have to find joy in being poor and, you know, these kind of developments. So I think that the poor people of the world, myself included, can really have a lot to say about what it means to live an anti-consumer lifestyle by our very nature, not having very much money, how we go about life and how it's actually more enjoyable to have more free time. I mean, I have a tremendous amount of free time because I don't make that much money. You know, so people see my life and they're like, what, you're a full-time writer? You basically have your whole day to do whatever you want. It's like, yeah, but the trade-off is I don't make $150,000 a year and have a 70-hour-a-week job or whatever. So I think that, yeah.
It's an okay trade-off.
Yeah,
Again, I think that's the whole other part of the equation is right livelihood and doing something that you can feel good about and allows you the energy and time to engage with the rest of your life.
Right.
And unfortunately, with that, we are out of time. Thank you, Micah,
for joining
us this morning.
Thank you for having me on. It was wonderful.
And we hope to do it again sometime soon. We encourage folks to go out there and have fun with each other and not buy anything today and question it tomorrow too.
Absolutely. And stay positively revolting.
We'll be back next Friday, actually. I'm sorry. No, we'll be back 2 weeks from now interviewing Steve Hicks, the author of Kidnapping in Milan, the CIA on Trial. We'll see you then.